Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
Joining us again. My name is Jack Bennett, and I'm here, as usual, with my dad, Christian author Rob Bennett. And we want to welcome you back to the Popcorn Cathedral, your imaginary movie palace of the mind located at the junction of film, faith, and fantasy. See, we just finished a meaty five-part look at Raiders of the Lost Ark from a Christian perspective. It was definitely a lot of fun. It was so meaty, in fact, that we both felt the need to take a bit of a holiday this week and simply just jaw for a while on a fun topic that didn't take a lot of research. The Marvel Cinematic Universe. Where we are and what we can look forward to in the year ahead. So we're calling this week's session simply our Spring 2018 MCU Update.
Excellent. Good job. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. And we should hopefully have a fun talk here.
Should be fun.
Be a little less scripted than we have been doing, but hopefully still worthwhile. Thanks for tuning back in. Really appreciate the very large number of downloads we're getting so far.
You've been doing great so far.
Well, we're pushing 500 downloads on our number one post.
All right.
And we'll see. How we're doing. So that's a lot of people downloading. I hope that means a lot of people are listening. I don't know. I'm new to this kind of thing.
We'll see here.
We'll see. But I do hope that more of you will find our Facebook group, the Popcorn Cathedral, and send us a joining request, because it's encouraging to us to get feedback, and the main way we can get it is through that Facebook group. So
the wonders of social media.
Exactly right. Anyway, this is interesting. Jack mentioned before we started that last week we did this podcast in the dark.
Yep.
because of daylight savings time, it's
here
nice.
We are, broad daylight outside.
Yeah, outside,
the wonder,
yes.
The miracles of daylight savings time,
and a nice view of the Great Smoky Mountains outside.
Wonderful.
Our window here.
I wish we could show you, but unfortunately,
right. It's not quite that miraculous.
Not
yet.
Quite that miraculous. Yeah,
we live here in the mountains, in the Great Smoky Mountains, actually inside the Cherokee National Forest. So it's a pretty pleasant view out the window. We had a nice springish day today. And we're looking out of our big bay windows here inside the old farmhouse. Jack and I sleep every night in the farmhouse that's 102 years old this year.
102.
And it's the third house that has stood on this property while it's been in our family. So that should give you some idea of how long the Bradley family, my mother's family, my paternal ancestors, the Bradleys, have lived on this piece of property. In fact, next year is our bicentennial on the property.
Right, 200 so years.
Have to have a big bicentennial celebration next year.
It'll be fun.
Those folks certainly could never have imagined the internet or a podcast, and we're doing it here from the
here from our humble abode.
Yeah, here in the mountains of East Tennessee. So thank you for joining us, as
Jack
so ably said earlier. Yeah, we finished with Indy, and we're moving on to other things, and we have another subject in mind for next time. Maybe start up another little multi-part series.
Yeah, a little
but just
study.
For a nice little break, we thought we would just jawbone a little while about the... one of the coolest things going on right now is this big series of Marvel comics films. They're
amazing. It's incredible. I'm loving Marvel. I'm absolutely loving every one of them here. They just seem to get better as they go. It's quite something.
Well, I think it makes sense for Jack and I to lay out for you guys here at the beginning how we come at this thing. Neither one of us has much of a background in the comics.
I have none whatsoever. Dad read comic books back in his day, of course, when he was more my age and everything.
That's right. And I got out of the comics business, not because I was disgusted with anything or
about a loss of interest, really.
Yeah, about 1980 or so, I stopped reading. So,
well, I mean, you left for the Navy, and
Right. It's just I sort of consciously picked a speciality when it comes to my interests, and I picked film. Yeah. So we come at this, Jack and I both, I think, come at this more as film buffs.
More as movie people and less as diehard comic historians.
So that's going to be both a blessing and a curse, I suppose. You guys will constantly be saying, these guys don't know what they're talking about.
We're going ahead and say right now, we don't know beans about the lore for all of this.
What I know about the lore is stuff that came out years before most of you guys were born. So the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies were right in my wheelhouse because they all seemed rooted in pre-1980
sure.
Spider-Man comics.
The Steve Ditko era, the original old-school golden age of Marvel.
That's right. All of that stuff was right up my alley because of my age group, I suppose. But so anything more recent than that is something most of you guys, in fact, some of you are probably pretty into Marvel comics, and hooray for you, but it's not where we're coming at it from.
Yeah, you know, it's I'm working on it. I really am. I'm trying to find us a Marvel expert. I've got a DC guy, and we may hear from him at some point here.
Well, it'll be interesting.
See, I don't have a Marvel guy yet. We're just kind of we'll see where we come from here. But we're loving the movies, I'll tell you that. The film series has been absolutely wonderful.
Well, that's right. You guys will not get comics expertise from us, but you maybe will get the approach of a knowledgeable film buffs, I suppose, looking at it as it comes in our direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll be interesting in its own right, I suppose, watching what these films look like to somebody that isn't really up on the lore. In fact, I guess we've enjoyed all of them. Jack pretty much cut his teeth on those Raimi Spider-Man films.
More or less.
We saw the first
Spider-Man 2 is one of the best.
That's right. We saw Spider-Man 2 at the drive-in theater,
Which one was it?
Swan Drive-In in Blue Ridge, Georgia.
Blue Ridge, Georgia. Right. Yeah, it's about an hour and a half's drive south of us from here. Yeah.
I think many of you folks out there probably live in states where drive-in movies have gone extinct.
Yeah, or much less common.
Well, we're blessed to live within an hour's drive of about five.
Five? Okay. Is it five? I thought it was three. But
yeah, there's a couple that we haven't been to yet that are just maybe outside that range. But
if you've never been to a drive-in movie, it's well worth going. The experience, the snack bar, the having a picnic, but in the, you know, let's all go to the lobby, little animated cartoon playing before the
nothing
movie.
Like a drive-in, nothing like a drive-in movie.
It's an all-American experience. It's
absolutely.
Very much a connection with the past. Because drive-ins are so scarce and hard to find now, you know, it's a bygone art, I think.
Well, there's a certain...
The enjoyment of the drive-in outdoor movie.
There's a certain sort of movie that's perfect for the drive-in. And Marvel movies have been that for us several times in the past.
Yeah. Specifically the Avengers. We've definitely, we have not seen an Avengers movie for the first time at a regular theater. We've seen both
hard tops.
We've seen hard tops, as they're called, in the as the drive-in fan would call them, a hard top, a normal theater, you know, a normal multiplex. But yeah, we've seen the first two Avengers movies for the first time at drive-ins. So we're hoping to looking forward to making that a 3 for 3 here in a month or so.
Yeah, here in a month or so. Yeah, so it's a perfect place to see a summer movie, and these movies are perfect summer movies so often. I personally have watched and enjoyed the MCU films, the ones that began with Iron Man in 2008. We have watched and enjoyed those, but I really didn't get completely on board with the idea of the MCU as a saga until Civil War.
Civil War is the magic golden boy of the series.
I got about halfway through Captain America Civil War, and I said, this is really ambitious, and this is really working, and it's really, really cool.
It's a lot of fun.
We became aware of what they were doing with the Infinity Stones.
That really connect. Yeah, I think that definitely became something that tied it all together to us. I mean, that's...
So that we knew we were leading up to a big grand climax.
Yeah.
You know, bigger than anything really ever seen in movies like this before.
Yeah.
And it's a very exciting thing.
I think we mentioned that... you mentioned recently probably the closest analogy we have to the way that the Marvel Universe has played out as a film series has been the old Universal Frankenstein series, for those who know those.
Strange as that sounds.
Yeah, I mean...
We've been racking our brains trying to come up... You know, the word unprecedented gets thrown around a lot here, but it really is kind of unprecedented. I mean, yes, there have been long-running film series, we're working on 20 installments of the MCU at the moment.
I believe Black Panther was 18 or 19.
Somewhere in there. And, you know, there have been long-running film series, James Bond, for example.
Star
but those
Wars,
are all
James
standalone
Bond,
episodes, as are most of the Star Trek films and all of that. And Star Wars has consciously tried to do a saga, but even that is not making standalone films that are very different than the main films and then slowly weaving it all together.
That's the thing. So, like, that's the key to Marvel is it's all happening... You're watching an Iron Man movie, and you know the Incredible Hulk is out there somewhere doing his thing. You know, the crossover, the world with so many different separate storylines that gradually, you know, culminate into an epic.
That's right. This is why storyline. When we looked for a precedent, the closest thing we could find was the old Universal Frankenstein series. And I think we can pick the person who's responsible for this.
For those of you who don't know, we probably should make the original, when we speak of the Universal Frankenstein movies, we're talking about the original Frankenstein movie that was made in the 30s. It came out in 1931. And this is the one with Boris Karloff, the green flat, although you can't tell he's green in the first movie. It's in black and white, of course,
right.
But the flat head and everything, the Frankenstein that everyone
probably have an idea of that. And Dracula with Bela Lugosi came out the same year. What happened was the Frankenstein series became, of which there are 8 installments, I think.
Something like that.
Is it 8? It may be more than that.
Around the time of it was the 5th movie, I want to say, they kind of just stopped and realized, movies are kind of, you know, the same sort of feeling, like...
Yeah, there was Dracula, there was the Invisible Man, there was the Wolfman, there was, all of these individual monster films came out, and they had a similar style, a similar vibe, because they were being produced by Universal, and many of the same filmmakers were involved in all of them. And but the real brainwave, the breakthrough, was when writer Kurt C. Odmack... came up with the idea of mashing the Wolfman. Screenwriter had written the original Wolfman film, one of the best of the Universal Monster movies.
Especially its later era.
That's right.
Not in the earlier 30s era, but the 40s and onwards. You know, it's definitely one of the best of the second wave of monster movies.
And he came up with the idea of mashing Frankenstein and the Wolfman together. And he went to him with a totally ridiculous working title.
He said, okay, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman.
And this was the breakthrough moment. And
everyone just looked up and was like, oh my God.
They said, that's fantastic. Of course, he hated it when they made him stick with that title. He said, that was just a working title. That's the silliest title ever.
The working title, yep. Yep.
It's similar to what happened with Snakes on a Plane. Snakes on a Plane is not a title. Snakes on a Plane is a pitch.
Yeah.
But they loved the pitch so much.
They loved it so much.
They said, use it for a title.
Snakes on a Plane, you know.
And most people agree that the title is better than the film in the case of Snakes on a Plane. But similar disappointments have been things like Hobo with the Shotgun and things like that.
Things that just have the greatest, most wonderful title, yeah.
Well, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman was one of these, and it was the first time, really, that anybody thought of such a crazy idea. We have these two pre-existing characters. What if we say that they live around the corner from each other, you know?
And why not? They feel the same.
That's right. And gradually, over the next few films, they start bringing everybody
all
in.
Of the characters
we
in.
We find out that Dracula and the Invisible Man take place in the same universe.
Sure, yeah.
And pretty soon we
and
have
the mummy
these,
and everything.
Yes. Well, they never actually brought the mummy.
Oh, I guess that's fair, yeah.
They were going to bring the mummy in House of Frankenstein,
sure,
but at the
yeah.
last minute they cut the budget and so we left the mummy out.
We didn't end up getting the mummy crossed over.
That's
not
right.
at all hard to imagine that the mummy movies take place in the same universe as Frankenstein.
Yes, but by the end of the Frankenstein series, we were just having these crazy monster mashes where all of these characters somehow wound up in the same story. And that's the closest thing we could find to what what the Marvel Cinematic Universe is doing. This idea of not just making many sequels, but making standalone films and then saying, okay, it all takes place in the same universe. And we're headed towards actually, in the case of the MCU, they've got a climax. They've got a story arc going. And it works better than I expected that it would.
Yeah. And I believe the IMDb article for Avengers 4, the finale of it, is the blurb for it is simply the culmination of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's right. That's right. And it should be kind of crazy. The thing about these films that's been so great is they make so much money that they can hire really good actors. They can hire really good writers.
Yeah.
Most of what's been wrong with superhero films in the past is that the writing hasn't been very good.
And the writing is terrific in a lot of the MCU movies.
Yeah, it really is. And they're taking the time to get all of that right. And so we've really enjoyed.
We owe a big thanks. Kevin Feige, you know,
Since Harry Potter ended, this has been where the saga that we've been watching. And it's been a cool thing to be introduced to.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
You guys may remember that in our very first Popcorn Cathedral episode, I related the really wacky story of how my sister pretty much threw a Christmas party for the Avengers. If you haven't heard that story, then I encourage you to go. I'm not going to recapitulate the whole thing here. But
we don't want to toot our own horn too much here.
Go back to the first episode.
As fun as it is to think. To tell that story. I mean,
go back to the first episode and listen to the first 15 minutes or so of it, and you'll get the story of how, you know, the Marvel films are being made in Atlanta, Georgia, which is where I grew up, and my sister still lives there. And because of that, she's found herself, you know, on this at least one occasion cooking for Robert Downey Jr. and at an event where Robert Downey threw a party for a few close friends. Well, it turned out the few close friends were pretty much all of the Avengers. And the party turned out to be a going away party.
And we found that out later.
And what Angie gathered was from the remarks was they were saying things like, well, this is the last time all of us will be together and things like that. So it turned out to be a bit of a big event. They were not all in costume, but they all still had their makeup on because the last day, this was lunch on the last day before Christmas holiday. I think they came back for a few reshoots in the first week or two of January, but they still had makeup on, and my sister mentioned that they all looked bloody and battered. So that may give some idea of how
making Avengers
are,
4 is, I believe, as we found
that's
out.
Right.
Not
that's,
Avengers 3. This is Avengers 4 they were shooting at this point.
Yes, so. At this point they were shooting the shooting Avengers 4. Now, movies are not made in sequence, so they it's not necessarily true that they had been shooting the last scenes of Avengers 4.
Certainly not.
But at any rate, so there were comments made about, you know, there was a sentimental going away here at the end of the year. And but one of the things that's fascinating about this is that Jack and I started thinking, you know, we can deduce something that maybe fans have been wondering about. And that is, we can deduce which characters will survive Avengers 3 and make it into Avengers 4. How deeply into Avengers 4, we don't know. But we do know that the actors that my sister met are have survived Avengers 3 and made it into the final episode. And that's pretty interesting.
Almost everyone was there still. We know that...
Well, let's just go down the list.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
first let's
sure,
go down. Yeah. These are people that she specifically told us over the course of Christmas dinner who had been there. Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, Anthony Mackie, Don Cheadle, Jeremy Renner, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Pratt, Chad Boseman, Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Rudd, Tom Holland, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Lupita Nyong'o. Okay. Lupita Nyong'o is
Denai Guerrero is there as well. The
oh, that's yes. right. She was.
Yeah.
She was. You're right. These are warrior and love interest for Black Panther.
Yeah, warrior slash love interest.
That's right.
As we found out, which we didn't know at the time, we didn't know how all that was going to play out because this was before we'd seen the wildly successful and really amazing Black Panther.
We'll chat a little bit about Black Panther in a minute or two. But let's see, that list is missing three names that I can think of. And Angie specifically told us that these three people were not present at the party. Samuel L. Jackson, names. Scarlett Johansson, and Gwyneth, no, who was the third?
Well, it's really two more.
Doctor Strange.
And Paul Bettany as well, the Vision.
Now, she doesn't know Paul Bettany, so she couldn't tell us whether he was there or not.
Yeah.
The teaser for Avengers 3 certainly gives the impression that hard times are ahead for the Vision. The stone is being wrenched out of his forehead by Thanos in...
visibly on screen in the teaser.
That's so. Right. So that might seem to bode ill for the Vision, but who knows. But yes.
We know for a fact that Scarlett Johansson, Samuel L. Jackson, and Benedict Cumberbatch were not
present at the party.
Were not present.
And so... Will they kill off, for those who haven't been following closely, the speculation is that major characters will perish in the two final Avengers films here.
We are at a finale in this era of serialized television.
Now,
we got a movie finale coming up for everyone in the
story.
We
can say that those three characters might die, and possibly Paul Bettany. I don't think that Scarlett Johansson is going to die in these movies because they've been talking for some time, although I don't know that it's official, that they've got a standalone Black Widow movie in the works.
They're very strong rumors, yeah. Fun fact, incidentally, something just to throw out there, I don't know how much this means. If you go on IMDb and you search for both of the Avengers movies, you can see a cast list. And I'm not exactly sure how seriously to take it because... the characters that are the actors that they credit on it are not all of the Avengers slash the Guardians. Obviously, we have the Guardians coming in and everything now. It's only a part of the full cast on both of them. So it's hard to determine if that, you know, means that we're losing any of them in Avengers 4. I know for a fact that on the Avengers 4, the untitled Avengers 4 movie, that Scarlett Johansson and Paul Bettany are both credited as being in it. So I don't know.
Yes.
How much that means. Again, take that with a grain of salt.
All we really are able to do from this list is say that these characters survive Avengers 3.
Yeah.
Because, again, if you're going to die in Avengers 4, you have to show up and shoot your death scene, you know.
Yep.
So but yes, it seems to me very likely, very unlikely that they're going to kill off in either film. The Black Widow or Doctor Strange. We just introduced Doctor Strange and have done very little with him so far other than the first film. So
I sincerely doubt we'll lose Doc, we'll lose Black Panther, or we'll lose the Scarlet Witch, probably.
I think, to be honest, Nicholas J. Fury may be in trouble.
Yeah, it's very possible.
And I think it's possible that the Vision is also...
stuff's gonna happen. At least we don't know what's. We don't exactly know what, but we'll.
Right. All we can do from
it's gonna get interesting with Vision for sure.
At any rate, the only thing we can announce quasi officially is that the list we just gave you are people who showed up to film Avengers 4, which would seem to suggest that they survived the third one. So
beyond Infinity War, we have no. That's as far as our inside information goes. We're as in the dark as anybody after Infinity War. So
let's talk for just a second about Black Panther. We're doing our MCU update, and the latest wrinkle is the release of the Black Panther film.
The wildly made all the money.
Crazy successful Black Panther film.
People absolutely nuts.
People love the movie, and they love the idea of the movie, and it's been a huge success all over the world. In fact, I think it's catching up. They think it may end up being the most successful of all of the MCU films. Now, of course, all of those lists are, you know, what year did the original Avengers come out?
2012
was the original Avengers. You'd have to figure in for inflation.
Yeah, I mean,
ticket prices have gone up since then. So
even in the 10 years that we've been making and watching
all of that
MCU movies, yeah, you know, so inflation has happened. Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to say. But
it's a huge success, no question about it.
Now,
Black Panther is a character that I remember from my time with comics as a teenager. I think he started out as a Fantastic Four character. In fact, I think I had the issue.
He was introduced by way of the FF.
Yeah, I think I actually had the issue where he appeared for the first time. Probably I could retire if I still had it. Maybe I don't know.
Again, novices when it comes to
to
comics here. You know, it's been.
I was just reading an article today that jogged my memory. I mean, I could never have remembered this, but the Ulysses Klaue character, the character played by Andy Serkis in the movie, is not only in that first original story, he loses his hand and he gets it replaced with a super weapon made out of Wakanda technology in this very first story.
Yeah.
And so that's crazy, huh?
He goes back that far.
The plot, partially the plot of this Black Panther movie was in that first story.
So. Yeah, definitely. Although I think they've confirmed obviously in the MCU, the origin of how he loses the arm is different.
It is, yes.
Of course, for those of you who remember him, Andy Serkis appears as Ulysses Klaue in Ultron. And he loses that arm to the character of the namesake of the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's just great. You know, I mean, it's cool seeing it all.
It's great.
You know, I've always, as far as the super city in the African veld,
I've always
been a sucker for the Atlantis lost continent type story.
Oh yeah,
Absolutely. It's got a little of Shangri-La in it too.
I think definitely for sure.
Yeah, the idea of a place where they're deliberately hiding themselves because they've lived in peace. They've learned how to live in peace, and so they've been able to advance without the constant setbacks of war. And so the idea,
the troubles of the weary world outside.
Yeah, the idea of this hidden city. I've always enjoyed those kind of movies. There's a lot of lost city movies in film lore, and they're always fun. Yeah, and so that was great. We both enjoyed the Black Panther movie very much, and really got a kick out of it.
It's great. I mean, well, I think one of the strongest selling points for the Marvel movie so far has been the casting.
Oh yeah,
the casting has been so good. I mean, and even on TV, I mean, like, for those who are familiar with the Marvel TV shows on Netflix and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show on ABC, it's even going down into the smaller sort of minor leagues level, all the roles are just wonderfully cast. And
yeah,
just
part of what's making the whole thing work so well is that they go way out of their way to pick really first-rate performers.
And they're all terrific.
Something that this sort of movie has only been able to do in recent years.
Yeah.
We get a little taste of it in the 78 Superman film.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Where they finally cast A-list actors in this type of movie for the first time.
Yeah, it was definitely a watershed moment.
Right. But
to full maturity now, you know,
I'll
where every role
that's
is a
hilarious
first-rate actor.
Is,
you know?
Jack and I have gotten a big kick out of the fact that one of the only white guys in the in Black Panther is Martin Freeman.
Of all the people they could pick, like,
they literally picked the whitest guy in the MCU.
It's like they
to
looked
be the
around
the only white guy in the Black Panther.
And that's just, I think that's just wonderful, man. Martin Freeman is always just so much fun to watch. He's his breakthrough role was in the British version of The Office that came out in the early 2000s. Ricky Gervais's
something
show.
I didn't know until earlier today. The character he plays goes all the way back to the 60s.
About that.
That CIA.
Everett Ross.
Right. The CIA guy goes all the way back to the 60s. So crazy.
It's pretty cool, definitely.
So we
he's wonderful. Martin Freeman is always fun to see. And yeah, he makes a hilariously Anglo comparison to the African cast of Black Panther. And it's a lot of fun.
We have already introduced. Black Panther has already gotten his feet wet as an Avenger. I don't guess he's officially an Avenger yet, but he pitched in with Team Iron Man in
Civil
War.
Of course.
He's one of the characters who did actually become an Avenger in the comics. Now, notice my clever segue here. Jack is the person who's going to have to talk to you about the Marvel TV shows because I haven't had time to watch them yet. But Jack has binge-watched most of them, and he's really enjoying himself.
I'm liking it a lot, for sure.
Well, my segue is that the only one of the Defenders, I'm told.
The Defenders arc, of course, is the Netflix Marvel properties that have been going since 2015 or so, something like that. And that's the four Defenders of New York City, an obvious variation on the more world, I don't know what to say exactly, the more universe, I don't know, I'm tripping over my words here, but the Avengers, I guess, handle the big problems.
Somebody said the Avengers protect New York only when aliens from another world are coming and going to destroy the whole world, starting with New York.
Sure, yeah. Whereas the B-team are the Defenders, though, of New York City.
Yeah.
And the Defenders are Daredevil, Matt Murdock, Jessica Jones, the private investigator, Luke Cage, the man with unbreakable skin.
Power Man, that's right,
as he's called sometimes in the comics as well. And Danny Rand, the immortal Iron Fist.
Right. So my segue, which I've drawn out so long that it's not clever anymore, but
I apologize. That's my
fault.
That's
all right. The only one of the Defenders who actually ever officially becomes an Avenger is Luke Cage. So that happened early enough that I was still looking at comic books.
That'll be interesting, definitely.
We're guessing around and saying, wouldn't it be cool if there was a crossover between the TV shows, the TV universe, and the films. And there's some sense that there have been vague noises made by the producers of the films that some of this is going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
And I predicted that if any of it happens, it'll start with Luke Cage as an Avenger.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. So far, the MCU has had an interesting relationship with accuracy to the comics. They try to stick to it when they can or when they think it'll be meaningful to the fans, but they change a lot of things too. So they're not slavish. They do make changes. As Jack pointed out a little while ago, you know, apparently, Ulysses Klaue's backstory is completely different in the comics, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of things like that.
Well, various retcons,
right,
you know.
Right.
Many times characters have been rebooted and reimagined and through the years, the
well,
decades.
Well, a good example, a best example maybe, is Captain America does not survive the Civil War story arc in the comics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Apparently.
In the actual Civil War comic arc,
right.
Yeah. He's,
and so that's an example of a pretty radical change. But it's always funny to watch the fans. Sometimes the fans will let the changes go, and they like them, and they're okay with them, and other times they pounce. But at any rate, it was a clue to me that maybe this will happen this way, because Spider-Man, whom I happen to know, never was actually an official Avenger in the comics, although he joined up with them pretty frequently.
Sure.
For special missions, but he never actually
became a mainstay.
In Homecoming, they tease with the idea that, okay, here it is. He's being admitted into the Avengers, and he decides not
to
do it.
He's finally earned Tony's trust, but he decides
right.
to be just a...
And that seems like a
friendly
neighborhood
Spider-Man,
right?
Yeah.
That seems like a definite nod to the fact that they know that the fans are aware that Spider-Man was never an actual Avenger.
Yeah.
Which is what makes me think that maybe Luke Cage will be. So that'll be interesting.
Fold him in eventually.
Right. I suspect, though, if I were guessing, and you guys, this I hear we're putting this onto the internet, so it'll be archived, and I can be proved completely and totally wrong, but not the first time, of course. I suspect, if I'm guessing, that the first character to appear in an MCU movie will be Daredevil. And I think
the first TV show character to make
yes,
the transition.
That's right.
Traverse the gap.
And I think
TV
that he'll I think that he'll come in a Spider-Man movie. Because there's definitely a pretty strong link between Spider-Man, at least there was in the 70s, a pretty strong link between Spider-Man and Daredevil.
And of course, they both patrol the same city. I mean, Spidey is a New York local the same way as the Defenders. The Defenders are New York local superheroes.
Right.
So,
and,
I mean,
and Daredevil's,
it's not hard to
Daredevil's
to imagine.
Number one villain in the TV show, from what I gather. I've watched a few episodes. Is the Kingpin, Wilson Fisk. And he starts out as a Spider-Man villain. So
pretty interesting.
I happen to remember that he started out as a Spider-Man villain. So one of the reasons I think that we'll probably get Daredevil in a Spider-Man movie. That seems the cleverest way to introduce him into the films.
I absolutely love the Daredevil show. I'm a big fan of the Defenders. Definitely, I think they're all really well done. They're much darker than the Marvel movies. Feature films and everything, but they're good. Definitely, it's definitely a bit of a change in tone, but it's if you can roll with it, it's they're very very well done.
Whereas Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which you've seen most of too,
I have. I've finished the first three or so seasons of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah,
okay,
is much more. Yeah,
has more of the tone of the movies.
Yeah, and more of a closer link to the what's happening in the movies than the Netflix shows have right now. But, we'll have to, everything's still moving along. It's always in motion. So we'll see if that changes at some point.
Now, one of the things we did notice, Jack and I bet before we went into the Black Panther movie, that they were going to establish the sole remaining Infinity Gem, the Soul Stone. We haven't seen the Soul Stone yet in any of the...
We're at 5 of 6 right now. Exactly right, yeah.
And we have not seen all the other Infinity Stones.
The Power Stone from Guardians of the Galaxy. The Space Stone that we see is the Tesseract. The Mind Stone from Loki's staff. It's part of Vision now.
The Time Stone.
The Time Stone.
To Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, yeah. And then, of course, the Reality Stone, the Aether, which we entrusted to the Collector
at the end of Thor the Dark World.
So, but we haven't seen the Soul Stone yet. The last of the gems still is yet to be revealed in the movies.
And we thought certainly that we were going to find this protected safely in Wakanda.
Because, I mean, this is their last chance to introduce... That was their last chance to introduce it before the actual Avengers arc with Thanos. So, certainly seems to... Seems to suggest that we'll have to wait for the Avengers movies.
Yeah,
to find out.
If we had been betting men, we certainly would have bet that we were going to see the Soul Stone in Black Panther. But that didn't happen, so...
We'll see.
We don't know. I have some idea of what the Reality Stone did in the comic books, but we don't know what it'll be like in the films. But
after what we've seen in the second Thor movie, of course,
right?
Yeah,
it's only just hinted at there.
Yeah, but, you don't see.
But we started teasing around recently, Jack and I, just driving down the road, making small talk. You do a lot of driving. We've talked up how great it is to live here in the Cherokee National Forest, but it's 10 miles to the nearest grocery store.
It's a long way, definitely.
And,
plenty of time for chatting and socializing.
Yeah, 34, 35 miles to church and, you know.
et cetera.
When you live out on the frontier, you drive a lot. And
yeah.
So some of this jawboning that we do happens in automobile drives. And we started thinking, okay, what if Thanos, now, you guys, this will be just a lark. If this is fun for you, then great. I suspect that our comic book fans, people who really know this stuff, will know how many mistakes we're making here.
Yeah.
But we started thinking, okay, Thanos gets the Reality Stone, all the other stones too, so he's able to tap into alternate realities, alternate universes, okay? Whether that's what the Reality Stone really does, I don't know. But
Yes. Alternate universes and realities.
Right. So we started saying, what could he use that for in the big final battle?
Anything. He could use it to, you know, for anything.
Right. So something we've talked about a lot, and maybe you guys have thought about it too, is that if we had one criticism to make of the MCU, it would be that their supervillains have not always been as vivid or as memorable.
Haven't quite lived up to their heroes.
As their superheroes. Yeah. There's very few dud superheroes so far. They're all, you know, home runs, you know.
Yeah. And they've come closer to being duds, I think. Some of the villains along the way haven't been...
Oh, they just haven't been very, very memorable.
We've got Loki,
Yellow Jacket in the Ant-Man movie, and he wasn't terribly memorable. We got Guy Pearce in Iron Man 3.
Mickey Rourke in Iron Man 2. By the way,
a plot that all superhero movies need to retire forever is the corporate takeover plot.
Dad's pet peeve here. We can get on a little bit. We got to stop and pause just here for a second here. Hold on.
The hostile takeover plotline, which was present in Spider-Man 1, Fantastic Four.
The first Fantastic Four.
Right.
One of the Amazing Spider-Man movies has it. The original Iron Man has it.
And Ant-Man has it, believe it or not. Late in the cycle. We're still doing the corporate takeover.
The
corporate machinations behind
the
scene.
Yeah, the villain, has his board of directors take his company away from him. And he ensues his revenge on them.
We seriously need to
this
retire.
This is a lot of the...
We
read,
we need to retire the corporate takeover plot line. At any rate, some of these villains have not been terribly memorable, but a few of them have. But even the ones that have died often.
Yeah, we've lost the Red Skull. We've lost... Who else? What are the better villains that have been killed?
Goodness, let's see. I was thinking of the Red Skull, but
I guess mainly the Red Skull.
There may be. Well, here's okay. You got a reality stone. You can cherry pick everything, and thanks to some real life corporate takeovers, we now have access to some previous films. And it's odd. Some of their best villains were in pre-MCU films. So our first thought was, okay, wouldn't it be great if they brought Dr. Octopus back? Everybody agrees Dr. Octopus was one of the great...
Alfred Molina, and in Spider-Man 2, the second one, you know?
Okay. I mean. Well, if you've got a stone that allows you to tap into alternate realities, you can not only bring Dr. Octopus into the battle with the Avengers... You can bring Alfred Molina as Dr.
Doc Ock, the canonical version from the old movies, into this universe.
That's right. Well, as soon as we thought of that, we said, okay, not only can you resurrect the Red Skull, and sure, you want a Legion of Doom that's as cool as the Avengers, okay? Yeah. So bring the Red Skull back from the dead.
Yeah, once you get the Soul Stone, you can bring the Red Skull back.
That's right. And we started thinking, you've got access to alternate reality, so you can get everything that people liked from the other Marvel films.
Why not Willem Dafoe? Why not?
Willem Dafoe is the Green Goblin.
I mean, if this X-Men thing ends up going through, you know, what's stopping us from bringing X-Men in?
At least as an alternate reality, right?
At least as an alternate reality. I mean, right. Clearly,
most people agree that some of their best supervillains were in other films, you know?
Yeah.
You know, some of the ones in the MCU haven't turned out that memorably yet. Whereas the Doc Ock, the Green Goblin, the Sandman from Spider-Man 3, you can cherry pick all of those things out of films that the fans didn't necessarily always like. You can cherry pick them. The Silver Surfer from the second Fantastic Four film.
Oh, he's great, definitely.
Is the Silver Surfer a villain or a hero? Well, it depends.
Well, they talked. Haven't we decided they've talked about bringing the Surfer in? And
The Surfer would definitely be easy to bring into the existing MCU.
And
I can't help but think that we'll get him eventually. But
it's a fan favorite, from what I understand.
Yeah. The guy that played him just won. Was in the Best Picture.
Oh, okay.
He plays
right.
The creature from the Black Lagoon in this Shape of Water movie.
Yeah, there you go.
So, then. Okay, so we thought, let's cherry pick all of our favorite villains and get them together with the best of the MCU villains and stuff. Well, how can the Avengers counter this? We said, well, okay, then this is where we really start having fun. We said, okay, Doctor Strange has got some abilities in this area, alternate realities, other dimensions, and all the rest of it. Doctor Strange can start bringing some more heroes in from the other films to help out the Avengers, okay? So in this way, we can cherry pick the favorite things that people liked about the other films.
Oh, man. And,
so, for example, not everybody liked the Fantastic Four movies, but almost everybody thought Michael Chiklis was a great thing.
Michael Chiklis. He's terrific. He's so fun in it.
Yeah.
What's stopping you from bringing him in? What's stopping you from bringing, you know, James McAvoy and Jennifer Lawrence?
To tell you the truth, I thought if you were going to do the X-Men, the best X-Man who stands alone is Wolverine.
You have to think, right?
So even though...
What's stopping you from bringing Hugh Jackman into it?
Yes, Hugh Jackman has announced his retirement as Wolverine, we'll get him come back for one more cameo. Yeah.
One more cameo in the Avengers. But then it got even more insane.
And we said, okay, well, how about...
If we're digging around in the Fantastic Four...
How about this? Everybody, whatever you may think about... Now, I realize the stock of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies has gone down somewhat. I don't see it myself. I think they're great. But I think, what if you bring in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man?
Yeah, why not, right?
Yes, two Spider-Mans in the same movie.
Why not have Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield and Tom Holland all in the same?
Now it's getting crazy.
But it gets even better. I mean, what happens when you're like, well, I mean, Chris Evans could be, I mean, he's the most wonderful Cap ever. You totally buy him, but
yes. He was a great Human Torch.
He was a great Human Torch before that. Right. What's stopping you from having? What's stopping Chris Evans from playing both roles?
That's right. Yes, you've got it's alternate reality. You That's can right. do what you want to. Yep. You know. So I think people's minds would be blown. I don't know that we're seriously suggesting doing any of this, but
it was hilarious to throw all this around.
Yeah, it would be crazy bananas.
Yeah.
it might ruin the serious tone that they seem to be after, we thought it was a fun idea.
It was hilarious to think about, for sure.
Also, something we didn't bring up is that some of the characters from the comic books that don't fit in very well in the MCU,
mm-hmm.
you could bring them out for alternate universe purposes too.
Yep.
Like, I don't think they'll ever figure a way to get Namor, the Submariner, into the MCU.
The same problems as Aquaman, from what I understand.
Well, it's
familiar.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit. I don't know. The films keep getting more and more fanciful, though. I mean, it's. I never insane. Thought we could have got from the original Iron Man to
Doctor Strange.
Or, yeah, I mean...
let alone Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, as Thor says at the beginning of... during his visit to Bleecker Street at the beginning of Ragnarok, he says, "So Earth has wizards now, huh?"
That's great. I love it.
Yes, Earth has wizards now. So that's where we are. If we've got wizards, then we can have alternate realities. And
we've got machine gun wielding talking raccoons and trees, and we've got wizards... portaling around and everything, and their mirror dimension, and
well, now
anything can happen. You know?
Now that you guys have heard this idea, you're probably really glad that the MCU has good writers and not people
us.
Like me and
Jack. Yeah. Not us.
So anyway, well,
can't recommend the movies more. They're wonderful. We love them.
We're really supercharged for Avengers 4-3, which, as Jack pointed out to you at the end of last week, has been moved up a week.
No longer coming out on May 4th, but on April 27th, along with the foreign market. So,
which is pretty cool.
We've got Infinity War coming out exactly the same time, everywhere, same day,
and
everywhere in the world.
Then 4th of July weekend, which will probably be our drive-in movie film this year. Ant-Man and the Wasp, which the trailer looks like a lot of fun on that, too. Yep. So we'll get to see a little bit of the next phase. You know, they have said fairly ominous things about Avengers 4. This is the end of the MCU as we know it, and kind of the beginning of another MCU that has some roots in the previous storyline.
The rebirth and... a changeling is what it seems to be after Avengers 4. It'll become something different with our old characters in it, too, ones that survive.
They're not minimizing... Well, let's put it this way. The MCU so far has been very Avengers-centric. In other words, it's been a build-up to the Avengers, and then several Avengers films with spin-offs from them. It wouldn't necessarily have had to be that way. In fact, I'd only recently learned that Kevin Feige, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I think I'm pronouncing the name right. Hopefully somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. He was one of the producers on the 2005 and 2007 Fantastic Four movies, which I liked better than most people do. Not enough of a comics fan for the changes to bother me, I don't think, as much as they did some folks. But
again, from a film buff perspective, you know, I mean...
Those films actually have very much of the feeling of the MCU.
Much closer than
anything. They've got elements that people didn't like. The changes to Doctor Doom were very...
not at all well received.
No. And a lot of people complained that Mr. Fantastic seemed too young and a little too comic, a little too much on the comic side. Although... When the recent Fox attempt to reboot,
Fantastic
if
anyone
Four,
even remembers it, a couple few years ago,
it's
2015,
it's universally disliked 2015 Fantastic Four movie. If you thought that Ian Griffith was too young to be Mr. Fantastic,
The guy that they have.
They got the guy. They got the kid from Kick-Ass in the 2015.
Dave Lazowski. The guy who plays him. He's English. I can't remember his name.
A very, very disliked film. But at any rate,
not seen it. Can't judge. But, you know, I mean, it was. It didn't go over.
No. And in fact, it's had the happy effect, in my opinion, of making people go back and say, you know, those other Fantastic Four movies from the 2000s
weren't so bad.
A lot of people have gone back and given them a second look and
seen the third. There's some fun stuff in them. Well, we didn't really mean for this to be a defense of the old Fantastic Four movies.
No, that's not what it's turned into here. But I do like them more than most people.
They're fun. I like them. Well cast, you know. I mean, Kevin Feige was the producer. So, yeah. I mean, the same guy
one of the producers.
I mean, you have some of the same magic that's in the MCU now in those movies, too.
Coming into focus. Slowly coming into focus. That's it. At any rate, well, this has been a rambling stream of consciousness episode. So, I hope it hasn't put you to sleep. I think Jack's suppressing a yawn as we talk.
I'm all right. I'm making it here. I'm going to be okay.
That's about all we've got to say. We just wanted to party for an hour or so, or 55 minutes, it looks like.
Just hang a little bit.
About the MCU. So we may have deeper things to say about some of the implications of the Marvel Cinematic Universe at some point.
Got to see where it's all heading first
I suspect that issues of life and death will be involved in 3 and 4. So
Pretty soon.
We'll have more serious themes to discuss at some point, I think. But just for this week, we just wanted to have some fun with it all. So hopefully you've had a little bit of fun. Hopefully our ignorance hasn't been
too offensive.
So blatant that it prevents you from enjoying the episode. But at any rate, if you have comments or corrections, you can
please post them. Please.
Charitably post them at the Popcorn Cathedral Facebook group.
Yeah, come hit us up. Definitely. We'll be down to learn, you know, to some of the backstory.
Right. Well, next week, one of the major things that I teased in our introductory episode was the idea that I wanted to begin building a philosophy, so to speak, of Christian geekdom. And one of the ways that I did this at Cornerstone Festival was a Christian rock festival that was held for many years in Western Illinois. And I was the honored guest for 10 or so of the 25 years that it was in existence. And along with some other wonderful people, we put on an event every year at the festival called the Imaginarium, which is basically a bunch of Christian geeks geeking out under a big circus tent where the temperature was over 100 degrees at times.
I've heard legends. I didn't get to go myself, but yeah, I've heard it was...
And we did just what we've been doing in here for about 4 days. So, and it was a lot of fun. But one of the things that I did there that was pretty well received was a talk about what it means to be a Christian geek. And I'm not talking about morals or, you know, whether you should watch Game of Thrones or things like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about what is it, how does this stuff fit into the Christian worldview? Why do we feel so strongly about it? Why do we feel the way we do about it? Is it, it seems to stir the same part of us that theology stirs in us, that the deep thoughts connected with our faith, the legends, stories, the tales in the Old Testament and all the rest of it seem to come from the same sort of mythic place. Mythic, not implying that they didn't happen in real life, but that the same quality happens elsewhere too, sometimes in stories like Fantastic Four and other things like that type. And so with C.S. Lewis as my guide, C.S. Lewis being the person who turned the lights on for me personally on this subject, and also his mentor, George MacDonald, I was able to parse out, I think, a pretty profound thought about the connection between these types of stories and the religious imagination. one of the things that's most startling to me, for example, maybe this would be a short way to close this up and give you a teaser. Just about every time I open the Archdiocesan newspaper, whether here in Tennessee or when I lived in Atlanta, whenever they would introduce the new crop of seminarians, guys who had just signed up to be pastors in training, they would do a little interview with these young guys that were going off to various different years worth of college, years worth of training as Catholic priests. And they invariably, if there were eight new seminarians, three of them would be geeky. In other words, three of them would mention Star Wars or Star Trek or
something like that.
Written SF or, you know. And once I started noticing it, it was a little bit weird. We're getting a 30 to 40% geek-friendly priesthood these days in the church, which I, for my part, sounds great.
For sure, definitely.
But
for us here in the...
But I started thinking, there is some sort of organic connection between the kind of mind who can appreciate fantasy world building in a film or a novel, and who can consider the possibility of real other realms, heavenly realms, other realities beyond the senses in the subject of our faith life also. There seems to be an organic connection. So if you want to hear me take a few episodes to parse all of this out, then come back next week, because I think I'm going to start building some of this from the ground up. I gave a talk about this in particular called The New Gods, which some of you comics fans may recognize was the name of a Jack Kirby comic book a few years back. But I gave a talk called The New Gods, which looked into this subject we're talking about. So let's go ahead and call next week's episode The New Gods, maybe part one. And
we'll see.
And we will see if that holds your interest for an episode or two. So if that sounds at all interesting, we hope to see you again next week.
I guess that brings us to the end of another episode here. We'll be looking forward to seeing you guys next time, and y'all have a good one.
Yep. Once again, join the Popcorn Cathedral Facebook group. So long, everybody.
We'll see ya.
How many people we could help, and how good you feel after you've helped others.
I know Lent is about giving,
help others,
so I want to give.
Especially
these kids are talking about CRS Rice Bowl, a Lenten program known by generations of Catholic families.
But how do
children love it because they experience different cultures
through the
and gain a lasting impression of
every
people they are helping. You can bring CRS Rice Bowl into your home and experience the joy of seeing your children or grandchildren find new meaning in Lent. Visit CRSRiceBowl.org to get started.
Rice Bowl inspired me to pray more and pray for those who are less fortunate.
org/shop, the Holy Land gift shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
I learned how many people we could help and how good you feel after you've helped others.
I know Lent is about giving, so I want to give.
These kids are talking about CRS Rice Bowl, a Lenten program known by generations of Catholic families. Children love it because they experience different cultures and gain a lasting impression of the people they are helping. You can bring CRS Rice Bowl into your home and experience the joy of seeing your children or grandchildren find new meaning in Lent. Visit CRS Rice Bowl. ricebowl.org to get started.
Rice Bowl inspired me to pray more and to pray for those who are less fortunate.
The big Cincinnati Catholic Men's Conference is Baz Rutten. Tickets are on sale now for Saturday, April 28th, World Champ and Movie Star at CincinnatiMen'sConference.com or call 513-214-1534. Don't miss the incredible day of motivation. Roster is being hailed as one of the best lineups in the country. Men from all walks of life. In rare appearances, come see tickets now at CincinnatiMen'sConference.com or call Father Larry Richards, former Moeller High School and University of Notre Dame Cincinnati head Men's football coach Jerry Faust, or 513-214-1534. Baz Rutten, UFC World Champion, MMA World Champion.
Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.
The conference theme is What It Means to Be a True Christian Man in Today's Society. Don't miss the incredible day of motivation, spiritual benefit, and fellowship with men from all walks of life. Get tickets now at CincinnatiMen'sConference.com or call 513-214-1534. That's CincinnatiMen'sConference.com or 513-214-1534. Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.